By the Fire by Seriously Sapphic HP. Decades have passed since they were last in this house together, but Grimald Place feels as lonely as it has her whole life. She belongs here as much as she does not, and that has been the case for as long as Narcissa remembers. As a child, a prized and perfect member of the Black family, this had been one of the few Black properties that would never be hers by birthright. She'd walked the halls as arrogantly as if she were its heir, but it would never truly belong to her. She'd always been a guest and nothing more. She'd despised it for that reason. Today, in the midst of experiencing the second war in her lifetime, Narcissa is as out of place in a house that should make her feel at home as she's always been. She and Bellatrix are the only rightful Blacks left in this world, though still this house does not belong to her. But Grimald Place has become overrun with people who never ought to have set foot in its halls. Weasleys and mudbloods walk through the rooms Narcissa's aunt and uncle were wont to host society's elites in once upon a time. Blood traders and half-breeds who look at her like she's the outsider in this house her ancestors would have done wise to leave to her instead. She hates them all. She hates everything that's led to this. Narcissa stands in the drawing room on the first floor. Not the sitting room the other occupants of this once beautiful house frequent, with a glass of elf-made mead in her hand. Creature supplies her with it without her having to ask him. The darling creature ever loyal to a true Black. The infestation of pixies they'd discovered here days earlier, which Narcissa had not helped extinguish, has been cleared out in its entirety, but the room still feels as barren and abandoned as it had before. It saddens her more than she can hate that fact. Downstairs, a horde of Weasley children forms a rampage through what should have been her house, and Narcissa purses her lips for no one to see as she looks at an empty fireplace with wistful thoughts. A portrait hangs on the wall, but it's been empty for years. Not even the dead, save for the old hag Walburga, have deigned to frequent this place in a long time.
"Good times," a voice behind her comments, and Narcissa sighs audibly as she recognizes Sirius's tone.
"In this place?" she asks coldly, annoyed at the way Sirius presumes it's acceptable to wrap his arm around her waist and take the glass of mead from her. She lets him. She always lets him. She leans into his touch. "They haven't been doing well since her arrival here." Even with his arm around her waist and her back against his chest, it's inescapable that they're not doing well. Narcissa understands she couldn't have expected it to be anything else, not after everything they've done to each other. But it's a sad realization all the same. The inevitability of their mutual destruction doesn't keep them from clinging to the better parts of their relationship, like she used to cling to the manes of Lestrange Hall's winged horses for fear of falling to her death. With or without Sirius, she'll plummet during this war, as will he, with or without her. And they've both chosen to fall together, if they must fall at all. She chose her husband over him at the end of the First War, and stood by as the Ministry let Sirius rot in Azkaban alongside those who were genuinely guilty. He widowed her in turn, 3 years after his escape, and sent her a vial containing the memory of the murder. With no husband to choose over him, she shouldn't have been surprised that this is where they ended up.
"One or two good moments," Sirius tells her,
whiskey on his breath that the mead doesn't hide. It repulses her, but not enough to pull away. Narcissa looks at the fireplace that hasn't been used in decades and cannot help but smile as she feels Sirius's arm squeeze her waist lightly.
"You don't remember?"
"How could I forget? You lit my robes on fire." Sirius laughs. He doesn't do that too often since he's escaped Azkaban. But he laughs when she reminds him of this half-true memory.
"I'm sure I made up some stupid joke about it to cheer you right back up," he guesses, walking into the drawing room and towards the old fireplace. He reaches for his wand. Narcissa follows him.
You did,
she lets him know, sitting down on a black armchair near the fireplace as Sirius inspects the thing. We broke one of your mother's photographs, too. That one of her and great-grandmother Black. You attempted to blame it on Creature, but we still took the blame.
He never liked me.
Sirius whispers a charm, and bright red flames arise in the fireplace, making the room feel ever slightly less lonely. Narcissa scoffs.
You never gave him reason to, she tells him. He likes me fine.
Only because you hate the others in this house as much as he does.
Not you,
Narcissa says, without thinking her statement through. She takes a sip of her mead before she places it on the side table to be forgotten about. Sirius turns around, his robes dangerously close to the fire, and she hopes they'll catch on soon.
When did that change?
Somewhere between my husband's funeral and the fifth time you undid the locking charms on my bedroom door,
she says, as if it's simple, as if any of this is simple.
I believe it has begun to simmer down into a mere disliking.
Sirius takes a step away from the fireplace, his robes no longer at risk of catching fire at any moment.
And if I still hate you?
He asks, but looks away from her before she answers.
This room is depressing.
There's nothing in this room that gives her an argument against that. When they were young, when she and her sisters had still come over every winter to celebrate Christmas with their family, this had been the drawing room to which the five of them would be shipped off not too long past dinner. While the adults talked politics and war in the sitting room downstairs, the children, even when Andromeda and Bellatrix had crossed that threshold already, were deposited here. Back then, lights had floated around the room, and the fire was always burning. Mugs of hot chocolate on the table, and century-old ornaments on every wall and surface. Regulus would slink off to bed early in the evening, and both Narcissa's sisters would attempt to either join their parents downstairs or sneak out of the house to meet their own friends in the dark of night. And most winter nights around the holidays would end with Sirius and Narcissa having the drawing room to themselves. They rarely took advantage of it. There were risks she'd never let him take back then. But the possibility was always on their mind. Once, after Narcissa had convinced Creature to bring them one of Uncle Orion's bottles of fire whiskey, and they had drank it as if they'd been grown, Sirius had thought it the most exhilarating idea to press her against the fireplace and kiss her like the house belonged to them. Neither had considered the closeness of the fire, and the brief moments of excitement had been quickly ruined when the back of her robes had been caught in the flames. Several of the ornaments, including Aunt Walburga's photograph, had been lost in the panic. Bellatrix had not been able to stop laughing when she'd heard.
It does nothing to me if you hate me, Narcissa tells him, staring around the lonely room that ought to have been decorated like the Weasleys attempted with the other rooms in the house.
There are ornaments, not the traditional ones of the Black family, but horrendous and clearly homemade decorations worthy of the nearest bin, in the kitchen and some bedrooms, the sitting room downstairs as well. But this has not been touched. No one felt like wasting their time on this one. Sirius doesn't respond to that, but it's like he read her mind when he waves his wand around the room and conjures tiny floating stars that remind her dearly of the evenings they once spent here. It's the middle of the day, and they've only been discarded here because it's preferable over the rest of the order. But it feels just like it did back then. Hidden away in their own space. In this house that should always have felt like home, but never really did. Sirius holds out his hand and winks.
Promise to try not lighting you on fire this time.
It's a ridiculous suggestion, really. Soon enough, more guests will arrive for the Christmas feast that Molly Weasley's preparing when no one asked her to. And some of them will start to wonder where Sirius Black might be. Not many will ask about her, but Narcissa much prefers it that way. The answer they receive ought not to be that Sirius is having his way with her in the abandoned drawing room upstairs. Narcissa stands up, anyway. She pulls down her robes back into position, even though she knows they won't last long, and she takes Sirius's offered hand with a curious look in her eyes.
"I'd be careful," she warns, and he laughs.
The door is locked with a wandless charm, and the portrait on the wall is no threat to their privacy when Sirius Black the First has not been there for years. Narcissa suspects this was on Sirius's mind all along when he approached her here, but she doesn't comment that out loud. It doesn't matter. There's dust on the mantle when the sleeve of her robe brushes past it. Sirius tugs her closer by her hand, and with a whispered promise of,
"We have the time,"
he kisses her. The stubble on his chin that grows more irritable every time she kisses him brushes against her skin. He hates her, but she wouldn't know this from the way he holds her waist and casts a wandless fire-repelling charm before he makes them step closer to the burning hearth. Flames lick Narcissa's legs when the ornate mantelpiece of the fireplace bumps into her back. Sirius kisses her with familiar excitement that makes her wrap an arm around his neck and draw him closer despite the stubble on his chin and the whiskey on his breath. She still wears her wedding ring on a regular basis, morbid as that is while she sleeps with her husband's murderer, and the emerald stone embedded in it digs into Sirius's skin. He opens her robes with magic and lets the edges of it dangle in the fire, positioning his clothed knee between her legs to keep her in place as he lowers his head to her neck. Sirius bites her without warning, sucking on the soft skin of her neck like they were teenagers again, and all he wants to do is mark her as his own. She hated it then, out of principle and nothing else, but she holds him closer now.
"For old time's sake," she whispers, laughing when he bites her more viciously in response. "Fuck you."
He lets the opportunity for a joke pass him by in favor of shifting his position so she can feel how hard he is against her thigh. Sirius shrugs her robes off her shoulders and lets them cling to her arms uncomfortably while he nips at her collarbones. Narcissa lifts his head so she can kiss him again, moaning quietly into his mouth as she feels Sirius grind against her. He doesn't open his robes, doesn't undress in the slightest, but thrusts against Narcissa's thigh while he kisses her back hungrily. Sirius's hand moves up to her breasts, fondling her as she bites his lip and laughs when he breaks their kiss to call her a cunt. It's nostalgic and invigoratingly erotic to feel the fabric of his robes grow damp with her arousal, his leg between her thighs, where she moves herself against him in search of friction. The enchanted stars shine dim light on Sirius's face when she next opens her eyes. She almost says she loves him. "Just like this?" she asks instead, lowering her hand to his cock and laughing mockingly when he bucks into her touch. It adds to the thrill of doing this in the drawing room, out in the open, even though the door is locked. Sirius ruts against her like he did when they were young, hiding in locked rooms and closets and stealing any moment alone that they could. He comes faster than anticipated, no doubt the same memories on his mind that were on hers. Narcissa feels a pulsing arousal when she hears him moan, feels his cock twitch beneath his robes as he comes, his breath heavy against her neck. He pants loudly, his head laying on her shoulder as his hand cups her breast teasingly. It's only a few moments before she decides she's waited long enough. She pushes Sirius's head off her shoulder and presses a kiss to his lips before raising one questioning eyebrow. He gets it immediately.
"Never change," he mocks her, kissing beneath her jaw and biting her softly. "Impatient bitch."
Sirius doesn't bother to cast a protective charm over himself when he sinks to his knees, close enough to the fire to warrant caution, and bites the inside of Narcissa's thigh.
"To your liking," he teases when he hears her gasp.
He works quickly, with his hand grabbing her thigh and his head between her thighs where he gives her no time to warm up to him. She's dripping wet before he licks her, but she moans when his tongue drags across her folds like she's the best thing he's ever tasted. The flames continue to heat up her body, harmless to her, but a constant risk he takes when holding her steady. Narcissa hopes he'll leave the drawing room with burns on his fingers, but she doesn't voice this. She suspects he'll be more careful than that. But he's always had a self-destructive tendency that she loves to witness. His hair feels perfect between her fingers, drawing him closer every time he pulls away from her for air. His tongue circles her clit, and his fingers, warm from how near to the fire they were, push inside her just enough to make her miss their presence when he takes them away again. He loves to rile her up like this, but today he doesn't draw it out for half as long as he might have. Wet fingers hold her thigh, and Narcissa would be disgusted with him if she wasn't so impossibly turned on by the sensations washing over her. Her moans grow softer but more frequent, like whimpered breaths she has little control over, as her walls clench when Sirius places his lips directly over her clit and sucks. Narcissa's grip on his hair tightens so much that she can feel him wince against her center, and she moans louder. His self-satisfied smirk when she comes almost undoes the pleasure he brought her. She only sees him that happy with himself when he's just shagged her. Never after he remembers what they've done, and why they can never be. But always in the moments right after they've let themselves pretend. His face shines with her wetness, reflecting the floating stars around them as he leans back on the floor and reaches out his hand so she can help him stand up.
"Kept my promise," he tells her, kissing her mouth almost sweetly. "No one caught fire."
"We could change that," she offers, though she touches his cheek with a genuine smile. Narcissa is half glad now that he didn't burn his fingers. "There's always tomorrow."
"Not today," Sirius says, like he's reading her mind again.
He undoes the repelling charm, and Narcissa wisely steps away from the fireplace. The room looks just as hauntingly abandoned as it had before. The stars, in retrospect, don't do much to save it.
"Today, Molly Weasley's going to yell at us if we don't help out with dinner."
Narcissa couldn't care less. "You cave to Molly Weasley's yelling?" she asks, closing her robes in the proper fashion as she mocks him for it blatantly. Sirius casts a cleaning charm on himself. It makes her blush like they're 17 again.
"I cave to her cooking," he corrects, touching the hickey he left on her neck with a prideful smirk. "And to keeping peace over Christmas, maybe."
"A peaceful Christmas in this house," Narcissa muses, hiding the bite mark with a glamour charm and kissing the disappointment off Sirius's face. "I wouldn't get your hopes up."